In Australia, we have quite a car culture, whether that's because of our long distances or other less tangible factors. And in many places, it's actually harder to get around on foot. But now we know how important walking is for our health and our mental well-being and our environment, we might need to shift that culture. We'd like to hear from you. Do you walk much in your daily life? And if you don't, what's holding you back? Leave a comment on our Facebook page. Anna Campbell is from advocacy group Queensland Walks, and a welcome to Life Matters.
Hello.
And Hannah Badland is from the Centre for Urban Research at RMIT University. Hannah, great to have you with us too.
Thank you. Hi.
Anna Campbell, what does walking do for us? What are the benefits that we're starting to learn about now?
Look, we all know the benefits of walking. First and foremost, health benefits. But we also forget there are mental health benefits as well. So physical and mental health. But it also connects us socially. So when we walk around, we meet our neighbours, we see what's happening in the local shops. And it's beneficial for all communities to be walking. So we love to see people walking.
And the list of health benefits seem to get longer every year. Reduces risk of heart disease and stroke, reduces joint pain. There's a few other ones, aren't there?
Obesity, diabetes, the list goes on. So we can say that walking is great for the body and for the mind.
Yes, can help with dementia. That was my favourite one.
That's correct.
So Anna, why aren't more people walking? What's stopping us?
Look, the reason Queensland Walks is here is we advocate for better walking environments. So we know that some of the reasons why people aren't walking is the infrastructure isn't there. In some cases, you walk down a street and there's a footpath missing, or there's a broken footpath, or there's something parked across the footpath. Some people feel insecure because their lighting isn't there, or in Queensland, we have the problem with temperature. So we need shading and trees, etc. So there are many barriers, and we're looking at ways that we can encourage more people and make it irresistible to walk. So the Queensland Walking Strategy is a really great step in the right direction.
Irresistible. I love that idea that people just can't stop themselves walking. But the survey that happened in Queensland, I think, found that as well as the things that you mentioned, they wanted greater connectivity. So they wanted things that took them to the places that they want to go. And there were some really startling statistics about how many people were using their cars for short trips, weren't there?
Yeah, it's really interesting that we know that 70% of Queenslanders walk for recreation and exercise, but it's that last kilometre near their homes that they're jumping in the car and they're not out walking. And we believe that it's the infrastructure that's the barrier. So we're wanting to see more people out walking. So what is it that we need to do to make these changes? So let's look at it. Is it the destinations? How are those connections going? Are there blockages of how people move through the suburbs? And we want to know more. And we're really keen for communities to contact Queensland Walks and let us know why.
Hannah Badland, from an urban planning perspective, how do we embed walkability?
You design it in. So it's right from the outset, and Anna's totally correct in my opinion in terms of infrastructure. But you need to have, there's a few underpinning elements. So you actually have to have the dwelling density to support the viability of destination. So once you get your density correct, then you start thinking about what destinations you need. And we think about it in terms of our work as being the daily destinations, which are your absolute core minimal things you need, such as public transport, access to a local convenience shop to buy your milk or whatever it may be. And then we think about it as local living, so the things you might need to access within a week, for example, so your post office. So it's about having those destinations fairly close. So we're talking maybe maximum of 800 metres.
Really? Quite close.
Well, it's about that's sort of between a 5 and 10 minute walk, depending on your ability and your age. So that's something that's actually feasible, and you can probably carry a light load back from whatever you've purchased. So that's really the mindset we should be thinking about. And there's what traffic planners have been using for quite a while is a road hierarchy of planning. So at the moment, what we're seeing in a lot of car-dominated areas is roads are, and I guess how we get around is actually predominantly focused on cars. And when you think of a lot of historical towns, for example, it's actually started around the pedestrian as the priority, through to cycling, through to public transport, and then with car being, and freight actually even becomes before car. And I think if you get that in the mindset, that's when you have the narrower streets, that's when you have the safe crossing points, that's when you have your destinations readily available. And you need all that to, if there's nowhere to walk to, people don't walk. So we do see that recreation walking tends to be a bit higher, as has been previously discussed. But where you get your most routine and habitual changes is through transport walking. So walking to public transport stop or walking to work or the shop or whatever it might be. So you really do need to engineer that in.
And Anna touched on before the individual health benefits and connection benefits. What kind of benefits do we start to see on a community level when you've got more people walking?
Well, yeah, that's really interesting. I was having a look at the report yesterday, and something that is particularly topical in Melbourne at the moment is around the removal of car parks around strip shopping areas, and that's hotly contested. And it was interesting that Queensland Walks actually picked up the economic benefits, because we have shown that time and time again, internationally, nationally, even with our own research, that once you actually take away cars from the urban fabric or redirect them, and people have an opportunity to linger in space, you see actually quite substantial economic benefits. So that's fantastic.
Because the traders are always saying, but if you remove the car parks, people won't stop directly outside my shop and buy things.
Yes. And it's, I honestly do not know where that comes from. And it is, it just keeps perpetuating and it keeps coming up and up and up. But the evidence is, in fact, totally the opposite. And I think the traders would actually be pleasantly surprised if it did happen. And I do understand there'll be roadworks and things that will be short term, but the long term benefits will vastly exceed any of the costs, the immediate costs. Then you also have obviously the social benefits in terms of the community. And that's, in fact, I was just observing today when we were walking our daughter to daycare and just how fortunate we are to be able to walk to her daycare. So it's whatever, probably a 10 minute, well, toddler speed, it's about a 20 minute walk, but it's about a 10 minute walk for adults. And just the network in her neighbourhood, and she knows the trees, she knows the neighbours, we know the people who walk their dogs in the morning. So you've got that social cohesion immediately. And then you've got obviously the health benefits, which is certainly not to be underestimated. And that obviously comes into, from beyond being an individual health benefit, then you end up with a population health benefit. And if you can, you know, shift the distribution of population health, that has immense benefits right through to how we fund our healthcare system.
We're hearing from Hannah Badland, who's from the Centre for Urban Research at RMIT University, on Life Matters today. And with us too is Anna Campbell from Queensland Walks. We'd like to hear from you too. Do you walk much in your daily life? And if you don't, what is it that's holding you back? Leave us a comment on our Facebook page. Anna Campbell, your organisation, Queensland Walks, is involved in the first walking strategy to be implemented by a state government. Congratulations. What is in it?
Look, it covers five different areas, and it's something that Queensland Walks has been talking about for quite a long time. But I wanted to hark back to what Hannah was talking about of that user hierarchy, and it's so true that walking should be number one as far as the planning for roads and infrastructure. And that's articulated in this strategy. So objectives of walking and walking more often, looking at communities, how they're planned, looking at the streets and paths and making them welcoming, safe, connected and comfortable for all ages and all abilities. That's a really important one, because sometimes we're designing that it's not suitable for prams or for wheelchairs or mobility scooters. So we need to look at that accessibility issue, and making it irresistible, particularly for short trips. For tourism, we can look at some regional development here and walking tourism. So we're really excited about those opportunities. And the final one, and we're really excited how the Queensland government consulted widely and interdepartmentally as well. So making it a high priority in policy and planning through partnerships and through supported evidence.
Some of the things that Hannah Badland mentioned, things like narrower streets and safer crossing points and also lower speed limits, they can be quite contentious in local areas. But I know myself, trying to get two small children off to school school and childcare, that if you want them to have active transport, those are the things that hold you back because it's too terrifying to have them on their scooters or walking around the streets. How much of a difficulty was it getting those kinds of things into the strategy?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And Hannah talked about some of the evidence, and the Heart Foundation and Rodney Tolley put out a really great piece of research called Good for Business. And it articulates that of slower speeds, making it complete streets so that there's a great infrastructure that people want to stay, and it becomes what they call sticky environments. People want to stay long and spend more time and more money. And what makes it great for children walking also makes it great for seniors as well. So speed reductions makes a big difference of people feeling safer, and there's less conflict between cars, bikes and pedestrians as well.
And Anna, can you give us some examples of very poor urban planning that really discourages walking that you've seen?
Oh, look, it's so tricky. There are so many places, but we like to look at the positives rather. And one positive place I can talk about is King Street in Brisbane, where they've spent quite a lot of time planning it. There's really wide footpaths. There are cafes that people stop, and people have gone there. You can see that in the volume of pedestrians there and the amount of businesses that are thriving in that space. We'd prefer to highlight some positive walking environments rather than pull out those negatives, because there's plenty there.
Indeed, there are. Hannah Badland, in Australia, cities are often quite spread out. So you've got Perth along the vast coastal plan and Melbourne reaching around the bay. Is it feasible for most people to use walking as their main way of getting around, particularly for commuting when those distances are so big?
I think there's an element of realism in it. Not that many people probably live within 10 minutes, 20 minutes walk of their work. You'd be very fortunate if you do. But I think the trick to really embedding walking behaviour is that it actually links into public transport. So public transport is often a really viable way to get to and from work, as long as you've got the right system in place and it's a frequent service. So we always think that a meaningful public transport service, in terms of our research, is a frequency of at least once every 30 minutes from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. on a weekday. So if you're not delivering that, it does make it very challenging for people to use. But if you are if you can have even a 10-minute walk to a public transport stop. The benefit of that is once you get to work, if you go out to get your lunch or you go want to go somewhere else around lunchtime, then you also accumulate a bit more walking, and then there'll be the walk home. So in terms of public health, it's a recommendation of around about 30 minutes a day of physical activity. So if you walk 10 minutes to and from work, so that's 20 minutes, 5 minutes out to get lunch, 5 minutes back, you've actually achieved your goals. So if you can do that 5 days a week, you have achieved what we advocate in terms of public health. So it's walking recreationally is fantastic, but to actually really embed it in terms of that sustainable shift in terms of habitual behaviour, we do need meaningful infrastructure that supports it.
How much would it cost to have that infrastructure? We talked a little bit about the economic benefits, but I imagine it would be a huge cost in all our Australian cities.
Yeah, we've done some work. Sorry, Anna, this is now on cycling, not walking, but we actually looked at if you linked in a 10-minute cycle to, we did this in Melbourne, but you pretty much have full coverage access to a train station within 10 minutes cycling. So walking, not quite so much, given it's about 800 metres, but in terms of cycling, so it actually doesn't cost much. As long as we can get improved infrastructure, so our footpaths and our cycleways need to be, I think, upgraded in some instances and maybe better maintained, or as Anna was saying, possibly run lighting and safe crossing points that for the most vulnerable users, so the older people, people with disabilities and children. But if we can actually create and upgrade a lot of that infrastructure, it's not actually that expensive. Think how much it costs to build a road. Think how much it costs to provide parking that is basically a taxpayer-funded thing that people get to use privately, and because they've got the good fortune, or however you look at it, of owning a car. So I think it's actually a change of the mindset. How much does this cost by not delivering this infrastructure? That's the question we should be asking.
And Anna Campbell, this is a coup for Queensland Walks. It's the first state to get their state government on board with a walking strategy. Why do you think the other state governments have been so resistant so far?
A really good question, and we're very grateful to both the Heart Foundation and other collaborative organisations for advocating for this strategy, and congratulations to the Queensland Government for taking the lead. I know that Victoria Walks, our cousins, and South Australia Walks, they're very keen to see strategies in their states, so we'll be supporting them of getting some state-based walking strategies. But the timing is right. The Queensland Government have been supporting walking in other programs as well, and in their planning frameworks and infrastructure, as well as the Department of Health in funding programs like Heart Foundation Walking and 10,000 Steps, and health programs like My Health for Life that all support walking and encourage more people to walk for health benefits. So the stars have aligned, but we'd like to see a lot more. And of course, the funding is just a small start. There's a lot more to do, and I think we've undervalued walking up until now. There's a global focus on walking and why it's so important. So it's really great to see that we're the leaders in this space, and let's see some more across the country.
What about cycling? How does that fit in with the strategy? We've had a listener call in, Anna, and say, what about the safety and comfort of walkers who don't want to share a path with a bike rider or a scooter rider?
Yeah, it's really interesting in Queensland because we do share pathways, and that's different in Victoria. Bikes can ride on footpaths. Same with scooters. So we have some certain challenges in Queensland that you don't see in other states and territories. So what we need to be doing is designing the footpath that allows for all these different modes. Queensland Walks supports all modes. We're all walkers at the start and the end of the journey. So we need to make sure that we look after these vulnerable users. So is it designed for a mobility scooter? Is it designed for a toddler and a pram and wheelchairs? And if it's not, how do we make it better? And as Hannah said, it's one of the cheapest pieces of infrastructure that you can implement into a community.
And Anna, you mentioned before that you want to make walking irresistible, particularly for those short trips. But you are in Brisbane, where it gets very hot at times. How do you convince people to leave their lovely, comfy, air-conditioned cars?
Yeah, well, one of the first points and the frustrations of our lives is standing there at the crossing and all the air-conditioned cars having right-of-way. So that's one of the first things is the timing of crossings at intersections, making sure that there's appropriate shading. We're not going to be able to change the temperature, but of course, if you have places to go that are closer by, shops and businesses and cafes, then it's going to make it more irresistible to be walking those small distances. And of course, improving shelters and shadings around public transport makes a huge difference to encourage more people to walk.
And Hannah Badland?
Yeah, so there's quite a movement now in terms of actually measuring and monitoring indicators towards different health, wellbeing, economic productivity markers in Australia through the National Cities Performance Framework, and indeed some of the work that we're doing at a state level. But there is also the opportunity to actually create some indicators of our walking environment. So, for example, walkability index. And so if you keep doing that over time, you can actually see how infrastructure changes are creating possibly being a barrier to walking. So we can then start identifying hotspots that we do need to actually put additional resource into improving the infrastructure. So I think that combined with, I agree with you, Anna, like in terms of the light phasing, really simple change. So change your priority, but also be held accountable for how we are delivering these types of infrastructures.
I look forward to some of those simple changes that make walking irresistible. Thank you both so much for joining us on Life Matters today.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Anna Campbell is from advocacy group Queensland Walks, and Hannah Badland is from the Centre for Urban Research at RMIT University.